Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Ulu family. We've been having some technical difficulties, but hopefully we can be heard on the air, and we apologize for the technical difficulties. And just bear with me for a few more seconds. Sister Nanana, are you there?
Yes, I am. I am here. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And so once again, family, as I said, we had some technical difficulties with Blog Talk. We were here on time and in place, and we're looking forward. And we welcome you to our Thursday night Dare to Win call. And we're here every Thursday to share vital information pertaining to a number of topic areas, as well as to make you aware of the opportunity to join us in our movement to create a vast economic empire using the cooperative manner, the cooperative model. And we are here, we are the drum, our people, we are the drum calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, and we welcome you to Dare to Win. And as I said, we're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we welcome you to participate in the conversation, and you can reach us by telephone at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And press the number 1 on your telephone keypad when you have a question or comment. And also you can reach us by internet radio, and you go to www.usliftingus.com, www.usliftingus.com. And when you get to the web page, you look for the home page. You come into the home page, and to the right you'll see a gold bar that says Ulu Radio. You click on Ulu Radio, and then you scroll down and you'll see a globe with the headphones, and it says Listen Live, and you click Listen Live, and you can join the conversation by internet radio. And we welcome you once again, and I'm Brother Thurman, Us Lifting Us member, and also on the line with myself is Sister Nanana, who's also a Ulu member. Sister Nanana, welcome to the conversation, and tell the audience how you're feeling this evening.
Thank you so much, Brother Thurman, for hosting and providing this opportunity for me to do some sharing this evening with the Us Lifting Us family, as well as other listeners. And I am feeling good now that we are on the air. And as you said, we had some technical difficulties there to start out with Blog Talk, but we're able to get those resolved. So let's move forward and have a very robust and a bountiful discussion this evening. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. It's good to be here with you and the family. And tonight, the topic, family members, is what factors slow down this economic success? What factors slow down our collective economic success? And thank you once again for bearing with us as we're dealing with this temporary audio Blog Talk technical issue. And we're here with you. And so moving forward, Sister Nanana, as an opening question.
Yes, that's really a very broad and a powerful question. And so I'm pleased to have the opportunity to address that this evening with our listening audience. Certainly, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative is committed to and has been formulated specifically for the purpose of creating a global economic system and global economic success and stability for our communities going forward. And so in thinking that through, I think that it's very appropriate for us to address the subject of what are some of the factors that slow down our collective economic success. We need to be aware of those so that we can realistically minimize them and eliminate them. So before I really address that specific, the specifics of answering that question, I think it's important to mention that what we are talking about this evening and what we are always talking about with Us Lifting Us is collective economic success. We're talking about the cooperative economic system. We're not talking about economic success as individuals. We're talking about economic success for us as an entire nation, race, or community of people. Now, I believe that all of us can identify and perhaps call the names of at least a couple of Black millionaires. These are folks who have individual achievements, have, you know, made great achievements, and have the economic wealth to show for that. And while that certainly is commendable, their individual economic success has had little or virtually no impact on our economic success as a total race of people. And so we have to keep that in mind as we move this discussion forward this evening, that we're not looking at individuals, we're looking at the total community. So that's what we're addressing tonight, the economic condition that faces us as a race or a nation of people. We are impoverished in large numbers and collectively. We have very little actual real wealth or economic power. And so the solution must be one that addresses the collective and not the individual. So with that said, factors that are slowing down our collective economic success, I judge that factors contributing to this condition include probably five basic things that I want to identify. First of all, we put time, energy, and effort into the wrong things, such as separating ourselves and identifying ourselves according to what I call groups or tribes, and separating ourselves by our what you might want to identify as religious affiliations, as well as cultural identities. For example, we have Hebrew Israelites, we have Asiatic Blacks, we have Moors, we have Native or Indigenous Americans, we have African Americans, so on and so forth. We have all of these groups or tribes, and we lack the unity between them that identifies us all as coming from the same root. We focus on religious differences and allow those differences to create separation for us rather than unity. And this is totally non-productive. Catholic, Baptist, Jehovah Witness, Church of God in Christ, and I mean, I can go on. And the significant point that I'm making here is that when we put that particular identity first and foremost, we position ourselves in such a way that we are less likely to have unity and we create more separation. The second thing is in the arena of knowledge. I judge that there is a lack of knowledge. We, in fact, do not understand collective or cooperative economics, especially how the fundamental values around cooperative economics differ from those of capitalism. That is very key. That is knowledge that we need to have before we can successfully move forward with cooperative economics. Thirdly, we still think that participation with a political party, a particular political party, will make a difference. There are many of us who actually still believe that if we identify and affiliate ourselves and do all of the activities associated with and vote according to being an independent, a Republican, a Democrat, that is somehow going to make a difference. If we look at our history, we should really see and understand it has never, ever made a significant difference for us in the arena of economic health. The system is not designed that way, and it's not going to change. So affiliation with a political party, any particular party, is not a route to solving our economic problems. Fourthly, our focus on education. In the past, our focus on education, and currently as well, is more directed towards getting jobs, in other words, going to school and becoming educated in order to be able to go back into the very oppressive environments that we have to deal with on a regular basis and seek employment in that arena rather than a focus on education so that we can bring knowledge back to our communities so that we can actually create jobs that benefit our social and economic progress. So there's a real major difference there in terms of why I study and why I become educated. Am I doing that so that I can become a creator and a manifester of my, hopefully my own job, but jobs that will benefit my community, or am I doing this so that I can go back out and seek employment literally from the oppressor? And then the last thing that I would identify is that many of us are still trying to assimilate, and that's the reality. Many of us are still trying to assimilate into the larger culture of the oppressor rather than owning our own ethnic heritage. We are still trying to be a part of and to be absorbed in and partake of that environment and that culture, which actually does oppress us. So for me, those are the five major reasons that I see that contribute to our economic success not moving forward as quickly as it could move forward. So I'm going to pause right there and give an opportunity for you, Brother Thurman, if you have any comments that you would like to add to that.
Yes, thank you, Sister Nanana. Very valuable information that you've given us. And we invite you, the listening audience, to participate and give us your thoughts. And you can reach us by telephone at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your telephone keypad when you've got a question or comment. And Sister Nanana, we could spend some time on those 5 points right there. And the last one is among the five that's we could go further. And when you mention assimilate, that's a real, real serious problem, because we're dealing with the subject of our economic success. And assimilating is one of the errors that we're making. We're making an error in assimilating. And in economics, it comes out in many ways, and including when we're assimilating, we want to identify and be like and consume like and try to dress like and style ourselves like. And we end what we do in the process of that economic assimilation into the ones that have never stopped killing us and brutalizing us is we turn that into donating multi-millions and billions of dollars to the sick system by way of many sources, but including other people's hair, hair that comes from, that are made chemically, hair that comes from people that, females that cut their hair off because they are going through a cleansing, as they call it, and hair that's also taken from cadavers or from dead bodies of people in order to enrich themselves and guarantee an economic future for their children and their legacy into multiple generations into the future, not a generation, but multiple. And Sister Nanana, we're going to continue this conversation. And what we're going to do is just take a brief, short musical break, and we'll come back and let you continue on with this vital subject. Family members, we're getting ready to continue with the conversation, and you're listening to Lonnie Liston Smith's Garden of Peace, and we need to nurture a garden of peace that we can live in heaven once again by way of pooling our resources and building tremendous, huge economic empires, as well as building empires of our spirit mind also. Sister Nanana, once again, family members, the topic tonight of the conversation is, what factors slow down our collective economic success? What factors slow down our collective economic success? And Sister Nanana, if you wanted to continue where you were, or do you want to move on to another part of the conversation?
Well, I think we're ready to move on. Thank you very much, Brother Thurman. I thought it was important to jump right into it and to outline for the listening audience what I saw, what I see as the major contributing factors, which I did. And so those are the things that I believe over and over again continue to crop up for us. The constant division that we have among ourselves within our communities, our focus on education, which is misguided. We don't understand that we get educated so that we can come back to the community. And the whole thing around assimilation, which you indicated is absolutely paramount, that we are still trying to be a part of an environment and a society that has shown us over and over and over and over again that we are not welcome in that environment, that we will not be treated equally, that is not part of what is forthcoming for us, and we need to take that and to understand what that means is I need to make my own instead of continuing to try to be part of something that has no place for me. And once again, I just want to say I think it's particularly important at this point in time when we are in a situation where we do have a political race that's going on right now, you know, for the presidency, that we understand that for us, whoever gets elected, it virtually is literally of no consequence. And the thing that is important is that once we have economic stability, that when election time comes around, we won't be concerned because we will have already put together what our platform is, what our demands are, and we will have identified the politician that's going to make that work for us. That's what happens in other communities, particularly the Asian communities. And so they can move from day to day to day and really not be very concerned about who might be sitting in that seat in the White House. So, but continuing to move the discussion forward, let's do that. Let's move on to another segment of this discussion.
Yes, we'll do that. And before we do that, we do have a couple of callers that have questions or comments. Caller with the last four numbers, 3440, please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your question.
Yes, good evening. This is Brother Shabaka, and I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. I'd like to greet you all as well as the other members of the listening audience, and I really think that you got a really dynamic show on this crucial subject. And just to I guess get into the discussion, and, you know, and I have been around, you know, some of my friends and associates who say, well, you know, our parents died, you know, for this country. We fought for this country. They might even say that, you know, some of my best friends are white. So, you know, what is this, you know, this black thing that you're talking about? You know, I'm doing okay. You know, some members of my family are doing okay, and those that are not doing okay. Well, you know, I've seen they just don't have a behavior that means to be successful. So could you address those in light of what you're talking about today? And I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brother Shabaka. It's always good to hear from you. And the question that you have asked leads right to something that I would like to address that I believe falls into the arena of what do we need to be looking at as far as solutions of how to gain financial stability. And so the thing that I put at the very top of my list, which I believe would address the situation that you just brought up, is that I see that there is a strong need for adapting the race-first philosophy that Marcus Garvey espoused, meaning total, complete, and uncompromised self-reliance. is basically what that is about. There are those who say that total self-reliance on other black people and on ourselves as African descended people is not practical in the world today. And what I say is without total self-reliance and total identity, putting race first, we are destined to perish or remain within an economic, social, and political servitude. So either we step up and we start to formulate ourselves in such a way that we become totally responsible for self and we totally take care of self and we put our people first above all else, or we position ourselves to continue to fall prey to the oppressor. So the situations that you're talking about, Brother Shabaka, where people say, well, hey, you know, I'm doing okay. I got my needs met and, you know, I have European or white friends and I think that's okay. That's unfortunate, and sometimes we just have to leave those people by the wayside. Everyone is not going to see the route that we are going with following Marcus Garvey's race first concept. But if we're talking about real unity and we're talking about true sovereignty, then that is the only route to go. And that's a piece of the solution that I see.
Wonderful, wonderful. Sister Nanana, we do have another caller. Let's check in with this one more caller.
Mm-hmm.
Caller with the last four numbers, 3619, 3619. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your question.
Yes, yes, greetings. Yes, my name is Sadat. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, yes, yes. Just want to thank you all for taking the time to discuss this content that you all are discussing. We don't have these conversations enough in our communities, and I just think, and I appreciate you all for taking a Thursday night from 9 to 10 to address this. But I want to engage this conversation and kind of give a perspective that may even challenge you a little bit. I agree with everything that the sister was saying, especially as it pertains to our political situations. Yeah, we didn't put Trump in office, and of course, it's not black people's responsibility to get him out. Find those 53% of the white women that put him in there. And so, yes, and I know the conversation is about how can we, you know, what stands in the way of our collective economic prosperity. And as the sister was articulating some of the challenges, religion, you know, ideologies for the most part, I want you all to ask yourself and challenge yourself, you know, of course, because I know you all are proud Pan-Africanists. And, of course, and I support Pan-Africanism as well. However, and I also support, I'm a cooperative champion, so I'm in these cooperative spaces. I'm a part of the cooperative, and I know the value, and I know those challenges. But to address economics and politics, I want to offer and present this to you as what I think is a real potent solution. My perspective is that there are only two solutions to address our economic position. And that's either, you know, through cooperative economics. And what cooperative economics does is allow us to make the best out of the blighted situation that we're in and try to build collective wealth with the meager resources that we do have. But politically and economically together, main solution is reparations. And, of course, and I support I've been a supporter of reparations for a long time, but I currently support the ADOS movement because I know that their plan is more relevant for reparations it's an evolution of the previous reparations plans, and of course, and it's part of the political landscape now. If you all notice, Gavin Newsom just signed a bill in California, but of course, you know, those are piecemeal reparations, that all of those reparations that are state and local. But the ultimate reparations is the one that the federal government owes to, and speaking of differences, for political purposes, American descendants of slaves had to kind of carve out our space for to make the political argument, because, you know, the reparations that we're seeking are for the people that it was due, American descendants of slaves, not everybody else. You know, everybody else has their own, you know, and so, and I just wanted to kind of give you all that perspective to ask if, you know, even as Pan-Africanists, do you all think that you may contribute to the same, I guess division that you all mentioned with the Hebrew Israelites and the Moors and all of those. So, yes, if you can feature on that, I'll certainly hear that.
Thank you so much, brother, for your contribution to the discussion this evening. I can certainly appreciate what you're offering as far as reparations are concerned. And my perspective on that, first of all, I do have a high respect for the work that's being done in the area of reparations, and to get reparations for us, certainly we are due that. However, I do not see that as a total solution. Reason being, until such time that we have an actual economic structure, a global system that works for us to continue the process and to continue keeping those dollars within our community, until such time that we have the ability to literally create employment for ourselves, whatever monies that we might receive in reparations, they will have a positive effect. But what we're talking about with a global economic system is that we're talking about a positive effect forever. We're not talking about for a limited amount of time. And so I don't see that there is a conflict between the effort of reparations and what we're talking about as far as cooperative economics is concerned. Actually, what I see is that they are going to meld and come together and support each other. And I really encourage us to not look for opportunities to divide ourselves, but to look for opportunities and say, okay, we got these two major pieces going here. What can we do to bring those pieces together in order to continue to make us stronger going forward? And so the systematic approach that's being proposed by Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative can very well provide the flow, the dam that needs to be built for those dollars that will come to us via reparations to ensure that those dollars stay in the community. Reparations can bring those dollars in, but ULU has the system to say, okay, here's the process and the step that those dollars can go through, so that that circle will be forever and ever and ever and ever ongoing generationally. So I would say let's look for the unity versus pointing out, you know, what the differences are. I do think that there's a way that they can work together and that they are both needed. We absolutely need both of them. So I would not in any way pit them against each other, or would I say that one is better than the other. See, that's a trap. That's the trap that we fall into, is and that comes from having been involved in capitalism and having been exposed to the value system of capitalism, where we think that everything is a competition. We got to change that mindset. Everything is not a competition. That's a trap that they have set for us, and we get into that whole thing of the tit for tat, and they just sit back and watch until we, you know, we fight the battle till the end, and then we have nothing left. So what I'm trying to say is that there is a crying need for both, and that we need to figure out how we're going to make this work together and not allow ourselves to get caught in the trap of pitting ourselves against each other as far as the energy of reparations and the system of the cooperative economics. They've got to work together for us to continue.
Yes, good word. All right, thank you, caller. Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you, Sister Nanana, with your very well laid out response. And we do have another caller. That the last four numbers is 3176, 3176. Please give us your name. Tell us where you're calling from and give us your question or comment. Caller with 3176, can you hear us?
Greetings, family. This is Brother Auntie from calling from Atlanta, and
okay.
Just thoroughly enjoying the conversation tonight. And thank you for Sister Nanana for asking the question of how do we get together. You're so right. There are so many divisions in our community, but I'm grateful to us lifting us. One of the questions that we pose is if you just ask the average black person on the street, do you think black people should control the economics of our community? And the overwhelming majority will say yes. And I when you began the conversation about pointing out to all the different groups that are in our community, it almost seems like a daunting task to find a common meeting ground that we can all organize around. But when we ask the question, do we think black folks should control the economics in our community, the majority of people will say yes. And so the work then begins to say, well, all right, for those people who agree that we should control the economics of our community, then the paths become a lot clearer in terms of what will work and what will not work. And so thank you for Sister Nanana for pointing up the need for an economic model, or said differently, an economic structure, or said differently, a global cooperative mechanism that enables our people to gain control of the means of production voluntarily. We don't have to fight with anybody. We don't have to beg anybody. We don't have to go sit in or wait for a Supreme Court decision. We have the control in our hands tonight to build this organization, this institution, to set in motion the ability to redirect how our money flows. And where it flows to and who benefits from it. Because at the end of the day, what we're really talking about is controlling our energy and controlling how our energy benefits our people and future generations. So I'm so thankful that you made it so clear that we're not trying to continue with the various divisions, whether they're religious, whether they're political, whether they're cultural. We're looking for common ground. And around the idea of controlling the economics in our community, I think the vast majority of our people agree that this is something that we can do, and that we're in a historical moment where we must do. So, again, I just wanted to put that on the table. Thank you all for a very stimulating conversation, and continue the great work that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Brother Octi.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is another good conversation. And family members, we always need participation from each other. So, Sister Nanana, earlier you had talked about Marcus Garvey and uncompromised self-reliance, and I believe you were beginning to say something about sovereignty and then going into educating ourselves concerning wealth. And so wherever you want to continue on with the conversation, go right ahead.
Yes, thank you, Brother Thurman. Thank you. Yes, I had started to address what I believe would be a some steps that we could take to lead us in the direction of doing away with those factors that I mentioned early on that are contributing to our slow economic progress. So in order to undo those, the first thing I mentioned was the race-first concept from Marcus Garvey. I think that's absolutely vital because that's going to help us to unite and to understand that we always put our people first, that we're not about doing things that are not going to benefit us first, always putting ourselves first. And then the second thing that I think is absolutely vital as we work towards a solution is that we have to educate ourselves, particularly concerning the whole concept of sovereignty and how to achieve sovereignty, to understand what it really is. Sovereignty means not having to yield to any external influences or to any type of control. It means that we can stand strong on our own merit of who we are, and that we, no matter what's going on in the world around us, that we are not influenced by it. So sovereignty, it's our authority, it's our power and control that would be recognized and respected not only by those within our community, but by those who are not a part of our community. And the sovereignty is actually fueled or fed by the recognition of having a shared experience that supersedes all individual experiences. And that shared experience becomes the bond and the energy to cement the collective unit as well as to generate the authority and control on behalf of all members of the unit. In other words, we identify with ourselves as being African-descended people first and above all else, period. And that's part of the education process that we have to go through in order to understand the benefit of that and that that truly is our survival. Another piece that I think that's important around educating is to educate ourselves concerning wealth. And that is, first of all, how do you acquire it? And to understand that wealth is passed on generationally. You know, it can be a skill, a knowledge, it can be some type of expertise, but mainly wealth is associated with the land. It comes from the land and the resources that come out of the land. So having just a basic foundational understanding of what wealth is and that we have a responsibility to accumulate wealth and then to pass that wealth on to others. If it cannot be passed on generationally, then it probably isn't real wealth. Another piece of us growing into greater economic stability is letting go of all of the ways in which we have separated ourselves from each other. Religion, skin tone, social status, titles, levels of education, all of those things that we have mistakenly been told and adapted by this Western culture that we've been exposed to, this capitalistic culture, we have to let go of all of that and to understand that that really does not define who we are. And then lastly, to stop trying to assimilate via what might be called, I refer to them as the new integration philosophies. They've repackaged them and masked them and given them new and different names such as diversity and multiculturalism or inclusion. And what it's all about is it's about making us weaker in terms of our cultural identity. And when we do that, we position ourselves so that we become more dangerously closer to, well, what we're doing is that we're creating divisiveness, basically, is what it is. When we are deluded by these different methods, we become weakened, confused, and we become marginalized. These processes literally threaten our lifeblood, which is our culture. We have to understand and value our culture. That is our life's blood. So, you know, that's what I see as solutions to help us get past the negativity of those things that are contributing to our economic downfall.
Good. Thank you so much, Sister Nanana, and family listening audience that's heard by telephone and also by internet radio around the world. Ideally, you're taking notes and taking this in and realizing what we must do in the right, proper fashion and stop taking the illusion, as Sister Nanana talked about, of the multiculturalism and the division and skin tone and all of those kind of things. And Sister Nanana, we've got, you know, 10 or 15 more minutes that we could go. And we normally would take a musical break, but I want to ask the question, is there anything available now that enables us to start the recovery and building process?
Definitely there is, for sure. A resounding yes is my response. Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. Us Lifting Us has the plan. Us Lifting Us has the blueprint, literally, for us to successfully build an economy specific to our needs as African descended people. ULU is a global business organization. It's designed to change the way that we do business with and among ourselves and with other people. ULU uses cooperative economic principles to optimize our monetary and our intellectual resources in such a way that large numbers of what we refer to as member owners will benefit. The process consists of pooling resources, both financial and intellectual, then using those resources to develop and maintain businesses within our communities. We have to be clear about that. We're talking about within our communities. And then the last basic step is distribution of wages and profits. to the member owners. Now, this is a simplified explanation of the process, but those are the three basic steps. I encourage all of the listeners to visit the website, www.usliftingus.com, and take time to view the videos and to read all of the information that's provided to help you understand the cooperative economic process and how ULU has designed it so that we will be successful in implementing this global economy. If you have questions, you can either call the main office, which is 404-592-2780, 404-592-2780, and leave your name and number on the voicemail. You will get a call back from one of our board members, or you can send an email to info@usliftingus.com. And a board member, once again, will respond to your inquiry. And you can certainly join and become a member owner via the website just by clicking on the Join Membership tab. I think the last thing I would like to say about ULU is that ULU is global. Us Lifting Us has members in Haiti, in London, in several countries in Africa, Senegal, Ghana, and others. We have members in Canada, in Japan. And so we are actively and every day working towards building this large global economic structure, and we invite you to be a part of that and join with us in this economic venture so that we can have an economically sound future and wealth to pass on to future generations. And thank you for asking that question, Brother Thurman.
Oh, yes, and thank you so much, Sister Nanana, for sharing so wonderfully tonight. And we thank the listening audience. With regard to the cooperative economics and pooling our resources, how would it look when we open up a marketplace? How will that affect? Would that have any effect on the employment rate of our people?
Oh, for sure, definitely. and the ULU Market and Exchange is the flagship, I guess you would say, for ULU. That is the major economic venture that we are building towards, and our plan is to have an ULU Mart in every major geographic location where people of African descended people are located. And how that will affect us as far as employment and jobs are concerned is that in that March, we are going to have a farmer's market. We are going to have a bank. We're going to have an area where we have healthcare professionals located. We're going to have an area where people can trade and barter. There's an area that we would reserve for meetings and entertainment. So just within the ULU Mart itself, if you can envision a large space, a space that is at least as large as any Walmart, and that every vendor, every business enterprise that's located in there, every business from our community that has office space within the ULU Mart helps to form a link to make our economic positioning stronger. So the Ulu Mart is integral to our plan moving forward. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, what else can I say about the Ulu Mart? It's just a wonderful venture that as it continues to come into fruition, that it will become become the place to be within communities of African descended people, and everyone will know about it and know that this is the place where all of our business and our commerce is conducted, would be in and around the Ulu, the actual Ulu Mart itself. So hopefully I've given a helpful discussion or explanation.
Oh, absolutely you did. And we thank you so much, Sister Nanana, and family members, we thank you for being with us, and do keep in mind that we're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Sister Nanana has been giving us a very good information, vital information. She's a regular participant in the conversation, and we look forward to having her back on again to delve down into the vast knowledge that's coming from her experiences and her studies. And we will look forward to being with you once again, family, and taking mental notes as well as written notes of what Sister Nanana and the callers, we thank all of the callers, went through. Recognize that we've got the tools, we've got that exact model of us lifting us, and never forget that our liberation requires our participation. Thank you, Sister Nanana.
Thank you, Brother John.
Us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. Thank you. yeah.